Welcome to another episode of Lola Lykke's Female Changemaker series. My name is Laura, and I'm the co-founder of Lola Lykke, the Finnish wellness brand for moms. Our Female Changemaker series is dedicated to individuals whose professional and personal passions have driven them to do something extraordinary, bringing sustainable positive change to women's well-being. During this series, we chat to amazing women's health experts, professionals, and parents who have gone out of their way to accelerate change and to create positive impact around them. I am joined by our very own content creator, Mana.
Hi there.
And today we are going to get the chance to sit down and have a chat with Sophie Martin, NHS midwife, a mom to two angel babies, and an expert in infertility. Welcome, Sophie.
Thank you very much for having me.
Yeah, absolutely fantastic to have you here. And I'm thrilled that you're happy to sit down to talk to us today. So I wanted to launch straight
into... Oh, it's a pleasure.
Yeah, pleasure to have you here. So Sophie, I wanted to talk to you about your current pregnancy first. You're currently pregnant, so congratulations for that. How's the pregnancy been for you this time?
Physically in fine, but emotionally I have found it very challenging.
Yeah, I'd say that. But you're quite close to your due date, right? And the baby is due next month.
Yeah, not long to go. So hopefully I can just hang on in there.
Yeah. And how have you approached the pregnancy from a mental, emotional perspective? You said that you've had quite a tough time, obviously after what happened before.
I've just tried to take it day by day and then also really build my support network in terms of friends and family.
Yeah. That's really helpful. You've shared openly about being a mother to Cecil and Wilfred, who never made it home. That's, of course, something that we would love to learn more about if you're happy to discuss that. Could you tell me what happened with your previous pregnancy?
Yeah, so we'd struggled to get pregnant and we had undergone a round of IVF. And fortunately, our first round was successful and I became pregnant with identical twins. Mm-hmm. And when I reached 21 weeks of pregnancy, I just went into labour and there was nothing they could do to stop it.
Oh my God. That must have been absolutely heartbreaking for you. I for one have had a miscarriage on week 15, so I can sort of relate, you know, how that happens all of a sudden and how awful that is. And I'm really, really proud of what you've been doing so far. I mean, you've been sharing so openly in your Instagram channel and sharing with other moms what the journey has been like for you. I think that's amazing and so important, because I feel that most moms stay silent about these experiences. They don't speak about them. They're sometimes even ashamed of them. But it's something that has such an absolutely profound effect on your life and how you go on from there. So I wanted to thank you for that, and that's that's the reason we think that you're such a female change maker, because you've had this courage to really share images and stories of what the experience was like for you. I think that must have been an absolutely massive help to lots of moms out there, because I think stillbirths and miscarriages are much more common than we actually believe. So do you want to tell me a bit more about what life has been like since you lost Cecil and Wilfred? How has that impacted your life?
I mean, it just completely changes your whole life. I never thought anything like that would ever happen to me.
Yeah.
I had quite a few problems after the birth as well, with like a retained placenta for a few months. Which was really hard. It just felt like it was never ending.
Yeah.
And I didn't really feel like I had anyone to talk to. It was really lonely.
Yeah, I can imagine that, and to have to go through birth at week 21 and to give birth to your babies at that point, knowing that they have no chance of survival. I mean, that is really tough. In terms of support at the hospital, what was that like? How did they support you there?
The midwives were amazing. I actually gave birth in the hospital that I work at. So I was supported by midwives that I've known for a very long time. And that was really special.
Yeah.
But then when I went home, there is really limited support. So yeah, that was quite difficult.
Yeah. 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 I agree that the midwives were really amazing during everything that happened, and they kind of, you know, left a nice memory of otherwise such a horrific event by being so supportive and so present. You know, that's something I'll never forget. We actually had a priest who came to the hospital, and you know, he was really supportive as well, and said to us that, you know, if we hadn't lost this baby, we'd never meet the one who comes next. And I thought that was, you know, one of the most amazing things you could say to somebody in this situation afterwards. And then we also had the baby's ashes cremated and scattered to this kind of angel baby section of a Helsinki region cemetery. So, but yeah, well, I would have to agree
with
you.
Lovely.
Yeah, that's a really nice thought. So you've got a place where you can go and visit. I think that's quite important as well. But yeah, I mean, the aftercare for sure, I think is lacking in many ways. I mean, me personally, after about 6 months, I went to my miscarriage counseling just because, you know, there were so many issues that I couldn't work through, and I kind of was fairly consumed by the events and by this sort of nagging guilt of, you know, was there something that I could have done differently to prevent things from going the way they did. So yeah, I feel you, and in our case the baby was just a week too young for us to know for sure whether it was a boy or a girl. But I mean, in your case, I mean, I can't even picture, you know, going another 6 weeks from there and then losing your babies at that point. So I really, really must say that you're super brave for sharing this with other mums, and it's so important and must kind of require such courage to post those pictures and to see them up on your wall, because it's so heartbreaking and will always be. But yeah, I just wanted...
It is heartbreaking, yeah. But at the same time, I'm really proud.
Yeah. And yes, sorry, go ahead.
Oh no, it actually feels really natural to share like our story and the boys. I wouldn't want to keep them hidden. They're nothing to be ashamed of at all.
Yeah, this is it. And like you say, your mum to two boys, just under different circumstances. But yes, I agree with you. Absolutely nothing to be ashamed about. But it's not often that we see pictures of babies on week 21. But I think what you're doing is incredibly helpful for other mums. You also talk openly about infertility in your channels, and you actually call yourself the infertile midwife. I think another very, very brave move. I think there is a large part of women and men out there who suffer with infertility, and again, it's a subject that we don't regularly talk about. It's super important that you come out and talk about these things. I mean, how did you become an expert? Was that through your own experience, or was that through your work as a midwife as well?
I definitely wouldn't call myself an expert. So when you're a midwife in the UK, you actually don't really learn very much about infertility at all. So everything that I've learned has been going through it myself and just having a real kind of interest and wanting to learn as much as I could about it.
Yeah. And Did you suffer with infertility for a while, leading to your twin pregnancy, or how did that go for you?
So we started trying for a baby, and it became fairly obvious quite quickly that it wasn't going to work for us. I just sort of knew. So we started IVF a year after we'd started trying for a baby, which is actually quite quick. Mm. This was privately. In the UK, if you're funded by the NHS, it takes a lot longer. So, yeah, it wasn't a huge amount of time because I just wanted a baby so desperately that I didn't want to wait.
Yeah. Yeah. And how did your pregnancy look like when you were expecting the boys? How was that completely normal, or did you have some problems?
Well, it was firstly a shock to have identical twins anyway, because we'd only put one embryo back. So we were very excited, but also quite overwhelmed. But the pregnancy itself was medically fairly straightforward. I had very bad morning sickness. The only problem was that when we had our 20-week scan, Cecil, one of the twins, had a club foot, but otherwise everything had been fine.
Yeah, yeah. So what happened came as a complete surprise, basically.
Yeah, and I've never had any treatment to my cervix or anything like that, which is often the cause of the labour, so it was just completely unexpected.
Yeah, yeah, I guess there's many, many reasons that I suppose we may never know. In my case, it was the GBS bacteria and a septic miscarriage caused by that. But it was kind of ignored by the hospital, I suppose, for a couple of days too long, whereas they should have taken immediate action and given me antibiotics. They didn't. And therefore, the kind of infection went really far, and then that broke my waters in the end. And yeah, then it became kind of urgent to get the baby out. But yes,
I'm so sorry to hear that.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's one of those experiences, like, you know, that you'll never forget. I think I've processed it, and like I said before, I think the one who comes next has an amazing healing power. So I really, really, truly hope that that's going to be the case for you as well. In itself, a really heartbreaking experience. And of course, I mean, women have miscarriages for various different reasons. In my case, I think the hardest part to come to terms with was the fact that, you know, I later discovered that it could have been possibly prevented. You know, that's of course something I kick myself about, you know, for eternity. But then I do remember that hadn't that happened, then I wouldn't have my Ella girl. So that's also just the reality of life that you're, you know, learn to live with and are of course really happy with in the end.
I wonder, Sophie, if you'd be willing to talk about what the IVF looked like. You mentioned you had IVF treatment done to get pregnant with the boys. How was sort of the day-to-day? We don't know a lot about it. I think this sort of comes again to we don't really talk about it at all.
Yeah, so IVF is incredibly intense. And again, I didn't really know too much about it until I started. So obviously there's loads of different kind of protocols and things like that, but essentially you stimulate your ovaries with injections to grow as many follicles, which have hopefully got eggs in, and then actually around 2 week egg collection, where they'll see if those follicles have got eggs in, and then they're mixed with your partner's sperm, and then hopefully they'll fertilize and make some embryos, and 5 days later they're popped back, one is popped back inside you. That's kind of like, in a really small nutshell, what IVF is. But it's, I would say, physically very manageable. You know, women, we're very strong, you know, a few injections is fine, but emotionally it's so hard.
Yeah, does it sort of contain, you talked about the injections that you would do at home, so I imagine there'd be maybe some bruising or something like that. But is there something else? Do you have to, I don't know, make a note of how you, your diet, how you eat or exercise, or does that affect your life in other ways?
I mean, infertility has probably infected every single aspect of my life. Although there's no, your doctor wouldn't say kind of your diet, obviously avoiding alcohol and caffeine and kind of usual pre-pregnancy things. But a lot of women like myself who've done IVF are very, very obsessive about what we eat, just trying to be as healthy as possible to make the egg quality as good as possible.
Yeah. And another thing I mentioned, I was, these podcasts always make me a stalker, and I was scrolling on your Instagram, and one thing that sort of surprised me was the experiences that you spoke about there. Like the obsessive knicker checking. I really wonder what was that about?
So that wasn't whilst I was doing IVF. That was in early pregnancy. Just obsessively checking for like bleeding in case of miscarriage. I would check sometimes like 50 times a day. I was so worried.
Yeah, I mean, that kind of really rings a bell. Having witnessed many friends go through this for years, and us as well leading up to the miscarriage, we, you know, had been trying for about 2 years as well, and in the end did resort to kind of medical help as well. But yeah, I do remember that time in my life when getting pregnant is the only focus and there's nothing else sort of that you can think about. And it can be a very life-consuming experience for sure. And you kind of think, even to the extent that you're planning holidays, because they say, well, you know, don't they say that it gets easier when you relax and you go on a holiday? But of course, at that point, you're already so worked up about the whole thing that that's not going to magically make anything happen. But yeah, absolutely. I suppose when you go through something like that, you know, first infertility and then a pregnancy that ends spontaneously on week 21, I mean, this is the natural outcome. I mean, of course, you're going to be panicked every day of your pregnancy after that. Quite the same as I was with Ella. I mean, I remember going to my 20-week scan, finding out that it was a girl, and then sort of 4 weeks after that, 6 weeks after that, okay, I thought, okay, now we're getting to the point where she's going to survive, hopefully. And then you're kind of, you know, you kind of go day by day and then just kind of, you know, thinking that when am I going to be safe here, you know, if baby decides to come or something goes wrong. So I can definitely sort of familiarize or understand that feeling of obsessive knicker checking and all the rest. Is there anything you can say that would make it any better? Is there any learnings for you that makes something like this a little bit more bearable?
I mean, it definitely makes me a much better midwife. I feel like I can relate to other women in a way that I just couldn't do before.
Mm. Yeah, and I think, you know, that there's nothing more important than that in the role that you're in. And I guess I think it would be safe to say that unless you have experienced either infertility or miscarriage yourself, it's maybe a little bit difficult to understand just what the loss feels like. But I also would have to point out that I think people take it in quite different ways. Some women seem to be okay after a few months. I mean, of course, if they've miscarried at an earlier stage in pregnancy. And some others can really take an extremely long time to process what has happened. So all of us, we have our different ways. But I think if you've got a midwife who has experienced similar things and can relate, I can't think of anything more helpful than that, to be honest. Could I maybe return to social media and just ask you what led you to open up? You know, how come you have decided to speak out about what's going on with your life?
So when we were first going through infertility, I felt really lonely and I didn't have anyone to speak to. I didn't have any friends who were experiencing anything similar. And I was just on Instagram one day and I was just scrolling. And you can search hashtags, can't you? Mm. And I searched IVF and infertility. And all of a sudden, I realized there was this whole world out there of other women who were going through something similar.
Yeah.
So I set up my own account. And first of all, it was anonymous. And it was just to talk to other women, really. I just wanted to speak to people who understood. And then it started to get sort of a bit bigger and a bit bigger. And I started to like share my face and like talk on there. Yeah, and it just went from there, really. So yeah, it just started off as I wanted to speak to other women.
Yeah, yeah. And what has the response been like? I mean, you must get contacted quite a lot by other moms, by other people in the same situation as you. What do they tell you?
Yeah, I mean, it's actually such a privilege when people get in touch to share their story with me. It's incredibly generous of someone to tell me the story of their baby that they've lost. You know, that's really personal to them, and it's really brings up a whole, you know, whole host of emotions, like you sharing your story with me today as well. It's not easy to talk about these things. So I'm always very honored when someone decides to share with me their baby.
Yeah, that's very true. And, you know, what a fantastic channel we have here that moms can connect. Because I'm sure you noticed as well, all those 3 years that you have been trying for a baby, it seems like there's baby news everywhere. I mean, that was the thing for me, at least. You know, everybody around me was pregnant and having babies. And it can be a pretty upsetting time. So to have this sort of community of moms who are going through the same thing, and who allow you to kind of openly talk about what happened, is really lovely. And that's really, really fantastic what you've done there, I think.
Thanks. And it also, I find it helps me to talk as well.
Yeah, yeah.
It helps me process the emotions and then kind of get my head in space.
Yeah, yeah. How has that been for you since you lost the boys? I mean, if you can, I think our listeners would find it really helpful if you could describe what the sort of process of recovering has been like for you. Can you describe some of the steps that you've gone through?
Yeah, so it's such a funny thing because you have ups and downs, and obviously the initial days and weeks are incredibly bleak, and you're also a bit numb, and you know, it's difficult to believe it's even happened, but at the same time, you're numb, but the pain is unbearable. And then there'll be days where you feel a bit better, and then there'll be days where you feel awful again. Even now, so it's been 2 years since I gave birth to the twins, and I still have days where I'm just overwhelmed with sadness that they're not here.
Yeah. So it's a really long process, and I suppose you look at the milestones as well, thinking now they would be two and all of that. But I think we will have mothers listening who've been through the same and who will really find it helpful to know that there are some positive days, and I think little by little things change, and you will really have to learn to live with it. But I mean, life goes on in a way.
And also, I feel like how different it can look, because we don't really. I just sort of want to jump a little bit into education, because we don't really learn about infertility or IVF. We learn about like sex education. We learn about reproductive health in sort of very biological sense, but we don't really at any point learn about anything going wrong. It's sort of this expectancy or even like the status quo is almost where a woman gets pregnant. Do not get pregnant when you're, you know, young. That's basically at least what I got taught in school. What do you think, Sophie? Was that the first sort of personal contact to infertility for you?
definitely. But then once I started talking about it openly, I realized that I did know people who were going through it, but they just weren't sharing with anyone. So it's been really freeing to be able to talk about it. I'm really pleased we're open about it, because I think then it helps other people think that it's okay to talk about it. It's, you know, no one's to blame. I'm not a bad person just because I've had infertility. It's just something that I've had to go through.
Yeah, I wonder, sort of at this stage, if you could explain to us, what does it actually mean? Is there a definition? Is it like, what does it mean to you?
So the definition of infertility is if you've been trying for a baby for a year and there's been no pregnancy.
Okay. And well, that went through for you. That was about the year mark. That.
Yeah, but I suppose many things will impact that. I don't know what the statistics are like, but I mean, since mothers are getting a little bit older when they start trying for a baby, you know, myself, for instance, I mean, our first baby came quite easily, but I hadn't really considered my age after that. So I felt like I had left it a bit late, and, you know, that may have had an effect on my fertility. I'm not sure. But I guess there's many reasons behind so many of us experiencing infertility these days, but it's really, really widespread. And I don't think anybody knows a person who hasn't experienced this.
Mm, at least one.
Yeah.
Well, in the UK, it's about 1 in 7 or 1 in 8 people who have infertility. And I was actually very young. Well, I still think I'm young, but I was I was only in my 20s. Yeah. We were having IVF.
Yeah. So yeah, you wanted to be a really young mum. Yeah, I was well into my 30s. And how, I mean, I'd love to kind of talk to you a little bit more about your mental well-being, you know, in all of this, and how that's affected when you've got this one goal in mind of a positive pregnancy test. What happens to you? Your emotions?
Yeah, so I'm quite a sort of type A person anyway. You know, I like to be in charge, or I like to organize things. And then all of a sudden, when your whole life is turned on its head, you're not in control of anything. It was unbelievable, really. I just became completely fixated on having a baby. I would say the last 4 years, that's been the only thing I've thought about, really, is having a baby. And dealing with that lack of control is it's hard to describe, really. I mean, you feel not like yourself. I sometimes think I don't even know who I am anymore. And I'm obsessiveness, you know, like researching, trying everything I could, but yeah, it took over every single part of my brain.
Yeah, I think earlier we spoke about how having a child changes you, and how that changes your social circle and sort of the people around you, and your friends may shift and change, and you become closer to some people and more distant to some others. It seems like it might be a bit similar, or was it a similar experience going through infertility?
Definitely. I found it really difficult to maintain some friendships, especially friends who were having babies, you feel like you're being left behind. So my social circle got a lot smaller. I didn't really want to go out with anyone. I was always thinking about what I was eating and drinking. Well, I didn't drink, but I wanted to be as healthy as possible. Yeah, my social circle kind of just completely shrunk because I felt like I didn't know how to interact with everyone. For me, it felt really obvious. It was like there was a big sign on my head that said infertility, but for everyone else, they didn't know what was going on.
Yeah, and sort of leaping from that, I found it really touching. I don't have children. I've never been pregnant, but one of the posts on your Instagram was afraid of being pregnant, after your miscarriage. And I wonder, and you had some explanations there about products, about sugar, receipts, plastic, about things that you were afraid of. Can you expand on that a little bit?
So for very obsessive people like me, you'll research everything, and to kind of the best egg quality, there's some suggestion that you need to kind of live an incredibly healthy life. So I would only eat organic food. There's in some receipts plastics, which if you delve into the research deep enough, will tell you that it's not good for egg quality and things like that. Plastic Tupperware, all things like that. And I just became obsessed with trying to have the best egg quality possible, because obviously that would mean I would be able to have a baby. So I, yeah, was very, very obsessive about things like that. I wouldn't touch receipts. Minimal plastic in the house, and yeah.
Wow. I mean, that's hard to even grasp what a profound effect that has on your life. Do you think in the end any of those things influenced you getting pregnant, or was it something else completely?
Well, definitely age is always on your side for egg quality, and it's so hard to know. We just will never know. Mm. But I only have very few eggs, but the eggs that I have made so far have turned out okay. So I've made 3 babies. So I feel like it was worth it for me. And actually, I think mentally it was worth it for me, because that was me controlling the things that I could, where everything felt outside of my control.
Yeah, I completely, completely agree with that. I mean, in that situation where, like you said, you have no control over what happens or whether you get pregnant or not, any small kind of way of holding on to that control where you feel like you're influencing things is really important. I completely agree with that, and that's something that I certainly did myself as well. But here, let's take a small break and we'll come back to continue this interesting discussion in just a short moment. So we're back. I wanted to delve into some of the reasons that may be behind pregnancies ending sooner than they should, and how important those are. We could have an ectopic pregnancy, for instance. Moms, you know, suffer with various problems. I mean, what is your perspective as a midwife? Is there standard way things go, or is our miscarriage is always completely out of our control, we hardly ever know the reason?
So most women, it's quite unusual to know the reason for their miscarriage if they just have one. In the UK, there would be no investigations after one miscarriage, which is obviously very hard for mums.
Yeah.
But very common reasons are things like chromosomal abnormalities, infection, things like that. So there's so many reasons that pregnancies fail. Miscarriage care is there could be so much more, but it's the NHS obviously is very stretched, so it's really difficult.
Yeah, it's difficult. I mean, I think the situation is pretty similar in Finland. I mean, at least at the time, I didn't find any sort of help from the public side. But then, I mean, thankfully, after the miscarriage, we went to a fertility clinic and decided to, you know, when it's the number one priority in your life, you think, okay, we can invest everything we've got into this sort of financially as well. And they were actually really helpful there. And, you know, before we could kind of launch into any fertility treatments, they wanted us to attend the counseling for miscarriage, because, you know, it's so important to get some of those things off your chest. What would you say to a mom who's been through a miscarriage recently, from your professional and personal perspectives? I mean, what advice would you give them at this point?
Firstly, I'd say I'm really sorry that that's happened. It's really difficult for someone to go through that. And then secondly, I would say, just give yourself time to grieve. You know, even if you lost your baby at 6 weeks, 20 weeks, 30 weeks, it's okay to be upset. I think a lot of women who lose their babies very early on feel that they can't be upset because it was early. So they don't feel justified in their grief. And actually, you're okay to be upset. You became a mum when you looked at your pregnancy test. You imagined what your pregnancy and your baby would be like. So I wouldn't put any pressure on yourself to kind of feel okay or pretend that everything's okay. And then I would also seek professional help if you need it. I know in the UK there's lots of charities available, like the Miscarriage Association. I'm sure you might have something similar in Finland. But they provide kind of support and counselling to mums who've lost babies. And then also I would build a support network of friends, because that has been one of the most important things for me, is talking to other women who understand, you know. And sometimes you don't even have to talk about losing your baby. You can talk about other things, but just know that they understand everything.
Yeah, I mean, that support network is so important. And I think just talking openly about the experience. I know not every mom wants to do that. I was one of those people who spoke about it to everyone because it's just my way of dealing with it. But I think from society's perspective, this is something that, you know, we'd like to see improvements in as well. I mean, I think it was New Zealand recently who decided to grant a couple of days leave, a compassionate leave, for mothers who lose their babies. And up until this point, you've had to take sick leave. And it's just, it doesn't even grasp the thing that has just happened. I mean, it's just a completely wrong way to go on about it. Even granting that 2 days compassionate leave is hardly enough. You know, you've just lost a human being and it's like surely one of the most massive mental kind of upheavals you'll ever go through. I mean, I don't wish it on anyone, to be honest. So 2 days is really not sufficient. So I really think that as a society, we need to do better. There has to be a better level of support. And there has to be that sort of recognition for what the event is like, and that a woman usually would require much longer than just 2 days to recover, especially mentally. So, but I mean, I'm glad to see this development in other channels like Instagram, and you know, with people like you, Sophie, who are so fearless about sharing your very difficult experiences. So I mean, these are amazing things that, I mean, to be honest, I mean, it's already some 5 years since my miscarriage, but I mean, I don't remember having this level of support there at the time. I mean, Instagram just wasn't where it's at now, even 5 years ago. So this is really welcome development.
I wonder, sort of jumping from that, I love how you said, Sophie, that you become a mum when you've had that positive pregnancy test, because that's where your mind goes. That's the whole thought process that goes through your head, you know, in those split seconds when you see the two lines. But then when you don't get to come home with the baby and you don't get access to that motherhood club, I think was what you called it at some point, how did that affect you? Did that change something? Are you thinking about it differently now?
Well, having gone through infertility, I always felt like an outsider from the mum club. It felt like, you know, a special club that I wasn't allowed access to. So you sort of resent it. Like, I almost don't want to be part of that club. Like, I want a baby, but I don't want to be with those people because they've rejected me. And then when I lost the twins, it was like a added layer of being an outsider. So I, you know, I had given birth, I'd been pregnant, all of those things, but I didn't have any babies in my arms. So people don't view you as a mum if you don't have the baby in your arms. And that's really hard. It's almost like they experience, or they're a bit frightened, or they don't know what to say. So yeah, I feel quite alienated by the mum club. And even hopefully in a few weeks, I will have a baby to bring home. I still don't feel like part of the mum club because I don't feel like everyone else, because I have this whole history. You know, if someone said to me, is this your first baby? No, it's not my first baby. I've got two babies who died. That's not really a good conversation starter.
Yeah. And that's so true. And it's so exclusive. It's not inclusive. It's exclusive of, like you said, in the UK, was it one in seven, one in eight women who go through a miscarriage, and how many more women go through infertility, who go through stillbirths, who, you know, tragic things happen. That's a huge group, but somehow we only really think about this mum club as being the sort of the parental kind of standard level where you should aspire to go.
But it's so true what you say there about, yes, it's a difficult conversation opener, for sure. And, you know, I can remember after my experience that some people found it really hard to discuss it. And I just kind of, I knew I had to discuss it. And for me, like for you, it's, you know, it happened. It was my second baby, you know, and that's the way things are and will always be. So it kind of, I suppose, alienated some people for me at that stage in my life where I felt that they weren't ready to allow me to have that sort of sorrow with me and just kind of live through what happened and, you know, continue to discuss what happened and talk about those what ifs and, you know, when the baby would be born and so on. So that was a really important part of recovery for me. But I think the main issue we find is that people in general, especially if you're a new mom and you have a newborn in your arms, you may find it difficult to talk about something that is this uncomfortable. But I think it's really good that we are trying to get away from that by refusing to be silent. And by kind of speaking up about what's going on in real life.
Yeah, I feel a bit like I started my own club of people who don't quite fit in, and everyone is welcome, and you just have to be understanding of other people.
Yeah, yeah. That's so important. I wonder, sort of, from your midwifery experience and from your personal experience, on a practical side of things, when would you or how would you talk to a woman who is experiencing infertility? How would you advise her to go about, you know, choosing a doctor, about where to go, when to go, about sort of like, because we've not had really a contact point to infertility. So what's sort of the first thing to do?
Yeah, so if you're... Well, in the UK, if you're younger than 35, you should wait a year before you go to see your GP. If you're over 35, then I wouldn't wait so long, like 6 to 9 months, then go and see your GP. And then, because we're fortunate to have the NHS, obviously your GP makes your referrals for you. We actually weren't entitled to any treatment on the NHS, so we had to pay for all of ours. So I did have to go through choosing the doctor and things like that. And I put a lot of work into choosing my doctor. And I do think that was one of the big kind of influencing factors which has helped us have success in IVF. So for me, it was getting someone that understands your specific infertility condition, because infertility is huge. There's so many problems that people could have. You know, it could be with the woman, it could be with the man. There's just loads of things that could be the reason that you're not conceiving. So don't just go to like a generic fertility doctor. Find the one who is going to be in your problem. Now, obviously, that might take a little bit of work. And obviously, if you're at the very beginning of your journey, you might not know the reason for the infertility. But once you have diagnosis, then it's so important that you see someone who's an expert in your specific problem. And then also for us, it's things like, and I'm sure it's the same, but the private system for infertility, they'll often offer you extra treatments, and it can be really difficult to know if they're actually good. So we're quite lucky that there's an authority in the UK which rates them and tells you what evidence base there is behind them, so that you can know whether actually there is good evidence to do that treatment and things like that. And don't be afraid of the internet as well and doing your own research. So obviously take that with a pinch of salt. I wouldn't necessarily be getting treatment plans from like Facebook or things like that. But, you can read an awful lot of papers, like medical journals online, and that was really helpful as well. And it doesn't always have to be in complicated medical language. There's lots of resources which are really easy to digest.
Yeah, and I feel like fertility clinics, at least here in Finland, they do very helpful sort of introductory sessions as well. You can visit, you can just meet a couple of different doctors and learn about different options. So I would you know, encourage people not to be scared of taking that step, to at least looking into the options, because I mean, thankfully, in our time and age, you know, there's quite a few options out there. You know, do go for searching information and what might work for you. One last question I wanted to ask you was about recurring miscarriages. Another very common topic, you know, again, something that I've witnessed very close by. What would you say as a healthcare professional to somebody who's going through something like this? How much of the experience is potentially genetic, or you know, is there something that they should change? What should they do in a situation like that?
Yeah, firstly, I would just say again, I'm sorry to people that are going through that, because that's really tough. Although I've not had recurrent miscarriages, I can definitely relate to that feeling of wondering whether you will ever bring a baby home. Again, in the UK, recurrent miscarriage topic at the moment. So they won't do any investigations until you've had 3 miscarriages, which is actually a lot for someone to go through. And there are, again, many, many reasons that people might have recurrent miscarriages. But what I would say is ask for a referral to a specialist clinic. So a clinic that deals with recurrent miscarriages, they will be best equipped to run lots of blood tests, scans, things like that, to work out why specifically you have had that problem. Because, you know, we're all different and there are many, many reasons that that could be happening. And some are quite easily solved, which is sad that you've had to go through 3 miscarriages or more to find that out. But in a way, knowing that they can be solved is also a relief too. So again, I would say you just need to see a specialist clinic. So don't just go to a general doctor. You need to see someone who, that's what they're doing day in, day out, because they'll know all of the tests to run, which can hopefully help identify why that's happening.
Yeah, that's great advice. And are you personally going to continue with your infertility and IVF content in your social media, despite having a baby next month? How does the future look like for you?
Yeah, so I feel like IVF and infertility and baby loss are kind of like my thing. I actually feel quite uncomfortable talking about my pregnancy or potentially the baby, because I don't want to hurt anyone who is in that place of sadness, because I've been there. And we need a voice, and not to say that's necessarily to be my voice, but you know, that community of women who feel marginalized because they haven't got a baby, I want to be there for them. And so, yeah, I definitely will keep talking about IVF. And, you know, this isn't the end of our journey just because hopefully we'll be bringing a baby home. We will need IVF if we want another child. So, yeah, I definitely don't think I'm going to stop talking about IVF and infertility.
Yeah, yeah. And, but yeah, I mean, what wonderful news. And, you know, of course, I understand the place you're coming from and, you know, I understand that pain. And but I also believe it's your time. And, you know, I really hope that you can be happy and you know, enjoy what's coming. I think people will understand that, you know, it's another reason to sort of believe in a way that, you know, they can follow your story, they can see everything you've been through IVF, all those years of heartbreak and then going through losing your two boys to then having a baby at the end. I think it's such beautiful closure. I don't know if you can call it that, but a beautiful ending to a specific time in your life. So I'm sure your audience and your customers and everybody who's following you will see that as it is. But yeah, I think our time is coming to an end. It's been really, really fantastic to have you as our guest here today. So thank you so much for sharing your story with us and continuing to share your story in social media. And, you know, we wish you the best from the bottom of our hearts for the last pregnancy month, and, you know, do wish that everything goes well for you next month. And we are really looking forward to hearing the news when the baby arrives. So,
thank you very much for having me and also sharing your story as well.
Yeah, no, it's always a pleasure to connect on that level. So thank you so much for sitting down for a chat with us today, Sophie. This has been a really, really exciting episode that we've recorded. So thank you for sharing with us and opening up about these topics that people generally stay silent about. Thanks, and until next time.